Hey all you Petra heads out there, thank you for pressing play on Rock, a Petrospective. I'm Lindsay Hall.
And I'm Dave Hall.
And we are still going on about this stuff. I don't know how many bands have this thing where you get to the final album and then you just keep going for a while. But this is great. This is great. It is, as we say in Australia, a classic.
It just brings it all back. It just brings it right back to you.
Back to the I've got nothing. I'm sorry.
Brings it back to your mind. It brings it back to the forefront. It brings it back to the rock.
Yeah, back to the rock. Yes, that's right. That's what we're talking about tonight. Is the first of a number of, or the most notable of a number of Petra projects in the years following the dissolution of the band. This one, it was kind of cool to see that this was, not to give him literally all the credit in the world, but it was kind of the brainchild of Greg Vols.
Yeah.
He was really the driver for this project at the start.
Yeah. When we did our interview with Greg, and if you haven't heard that, go back into our archives and listen to that. We had the opportunity to interview Greg X Vols probably nearly a year ago.
Yeah, just over a year.
I think we did that. Yeah. Greg sort of talked a little bit about how that came about, but it seems, with what we've heard and how it all comes together, I think you can sort of see that following that the farewell concert seemed to have softened whatever had happened between Greg and Bob when Greg left the band in 85, and whatever had gone on there and whatever circumstances had happened, it really seemed to be a catalyst for them to be able to move forward. And following Farewell, we talked last episode about Vertical Expressions and the Two Guys stuff, but then it seems that Greg and Bob began talking a lot more about the possibility of, as the phrase goes, getting the band back together, because that's what they literally did.
Yes.
They got the band back together, the classic band, and in this case the Beat the System era version of Petra, that they were able to get them back together. But it seems to have been a little bit of a drive from Greg, and I think it seems that perhaps whatever was going on for Greg, I think Farewell brought about a new perspective, maybe a fresh outlook on the ministry and the opportunity to reconnect. And often that's where things start. It's not that there's bad blood, but you're not connected, you're not talking. And I mean, how often does that happen in life? You haven't spoken to someone in years and years and years, not because there's anything wrong with the relationship, but you just haven't connected. And then you start connecting, something brings you together, and it just snowballs. And it really feels that may have been what happened here.
I think so. I mean, I only had brief interactions personally, but in all of my reading of his interviews and, the press that he has done in his life, Bob Hartman's never struck me as the kind of guy to harbor a grudge or any ill will of any kind. But it was that decision, Greg made a decision for the sake of his, at the time, for the sake of his family, among other things. And Bob's left faced with a decision. Does this ministry of Petra continue? Yes, it does. And it just it feeds into that thing of Petra, as we've kind of gotten used to saying, Petra being, a ministry first beyond it being a band as a collection of artists. One of the lovely elements of that seems to be this thing of once a member of the ministry, you're always a member of that ministry, and there's always a place for reconnecting and resuming. And it was a lot of it was particularly the interview that you know, when you were talking with Greg, and he talked, that was, he highlighted that was really the driver for him in doing this was recommencing or re-engaging with ministry to people with this music, with this group of men, sort of using that as a platform, you know, to sing the word of God again into places that needed to hear it or needed a refreshing of the experience of it. And you know, like for a group of, you know, 50 somethings, 50 to 60 year olds, you know, they're still rocking it pretty good.
They are. It's absolutely great. And we'll get into that. Yeah. You know, we'll get into all that shortly, but it's absolutely what they've, it really seems like you get that feeling like it comes across like it's the old expression, like riding a bike. They just fit together. The sound that is produced on these albums that we're going to be talking about tonight, these productions, they just fit you. It's like they were never apart. Like what you hear of the band in this case, the bringing this team back together, not just Greg and Bob, but Louis back on the drums, John Lowry on the keyboards, and Mark Kelly on the bass. This team of men, this ministry, it seems like they just slotted back in and got back into the groove, and almost like they never stopped. Because that's the feeling of the sound that comes through. It's not a mismatch. It's not a you know, one sound trying to dominate or push, or you know, it sounds mechanical. It doesn't sound mechanical. It's very flowing. It sounds very fluid.
Absolutely.
So I mean, look, and that's where it is. We're really looking tonight at this first iteration of Classic Petra. And this project, you know, if you know, you those of you who don't, if you don't know, this project had its beginnings officially in 2010. So, you know, that's the 13 years ago now, 2010, these guys started to talk about getting the band back together in a more realistic way. They basically agreed to do a project. I remember when this news came out. I remember when this news broke. This was big news, because essentially since 2005, in the eyes of the fans, Petra was done. There had been Vertical Expressions had happened, but realistically, I can't even remember there being a reunion event with anyone other than Bob and John Schlitt since Farewell. So this was big news in the community, because we were getting something new. We were getting, the guys are getting back together again. There was a lot of excitement about the idea of Greg X Vols hooking back in this classic iteration. And it's you know, they got together, and you know, the way it's been told, and the way we've been told as well in our interviews, they sat down as a group. So the five guys, they were able to get this Beat the System era band back together. And the guys sat down and they essentially chose their favorite songs to go on the album. So each of them wrote down a list of the songs they think would be best to do for the album. And the highest ranked voted songs between the five of them are what we get. And so what we get are 10 classic songs re-recorded and two new songs. One of them brand new, absolutely brand new. The other one, as we'll get into later on, something that Greg X-Files had actually previously recorded. But
on one of his solo projects.
Yeah, on one of the solo projects. But yeah, we get these 10 songs that are chosen by the band. So, you know, when you sit there and go, oh, what would the band like to hear? What do you think the band like? This is what the band like. This is their choices.
Yeah, it's a pretty rare occasion when you'll actually get, yeah, like that kind of input from the guys. And it always leads to some interesting, you know, interesting choices in there. Although I think to a large extent, these are all, like, for the most part, these are real classic choices that anyone would look at most of these songs and think, well, yeah, that's a real solid Petra standard. But there are a few there that, you know, I raise my eyebrow and I go, interesting that they chose that one. Of course, their recording of it for this album, you know, more than does it justice. Like every song on this is a complete winner.
Yeah, and we'll get into those lists shortly. But I mean, it's very clear they were bringing. They are essentially updating the sound, updating. You know that there's a more current touch to it. But I think the other cool thing about this album is it's not just the band choosing the songs, but this was a self-produced album. So it was recorded in John Lowry's recording studio, and the band were at the forefront of the production. So this wasn't, you know, didn't have any external input. So we had conversations when we talked about Jekyll and Hyde about how John Schlitt talked about how a lot of stuff, there'd been a lot of bits left out of that. And we had some really big discussions about sort of production decisions to not include some guitar solos and different elements of the songs. In this case, what we've got, this is how the guys wanted it to sound. This is, they produced it, they put it together, they recorded it themselves, and they brought the release and they released it initially through their own website. Like, it wasn't, you know, that they've got a release, they got a production release to help with the you know, the production of the actual CDs, but in essence, they did all the groundwork for this one.
Yeah, it's the best way that a project like this can come about. There aren't a lot of bands that are even in a position to do that, because, you know, a lot of sort of really big bands don't even have control over their own catalog. You know, there's a lot of legal stuff that they've got to wade through to be able to do it. So, yeah. it's obviously wonderful for us as the fans. I remember, I'm not sure. I think you had kept me appraised of this as a project as it was coming and as you were finding out about it. I had forgotten about it until our family holiday, when you gave me the album as my birthday present. It was around that same time. And had a great time, like, listening to it and reconnecting with that again. One of the cool little side effects of that was I was in a church at that time, and I didn't have a contentious relationship with my pastor or my vicar. He was an Anglican. But it wasn't an easy relationship, because the two of us are just incredibly, incredibly different people from very different backgrounds. And we had trouble communicating easily with one another. That took a long time to work through some of this stuff. But one day we had something to go do together, and I said I'd drive, and he hops on in, and this was playing in the CD player, and he starts recognizing the songs, and he leans forward and he turns it up and he goes, "This sounds new." And I'm like, you're familiar with, and for the first time I discovered he was a Petra fan from way back. And it was probably the first, one of the very few times when we had just a connection over enjoying something like this. And he was never an emotional man, but he got as excited as I had ever seen him, which wasn't a lot, but for him, it was pretty huge. Just hearing that, oh, these guys have put out something new. This all sounds very fresh. And, you know, he kind of asked for a copy of the album and gave us a little something to connect on for a couple of months at that point, which was nice.
I like that. I like that. And that, I think there was a key word there. It was a fresh sound. It was when you listen to the original recordings, they haven't just relied on doing it everything exactly the same. They've updated the sound a little bit. They've brought it into the present day at the time, which is now, you know, 13 years ago. But it was a fresh sound for the band for this iteration of the band. And it was really exciting. I remember when it came out, I got this. I think I had this on pre-order. I may have had it on pre-order or certainly got it very, very quick. And you know, the way things happened, the album was released in about the studio version of the album was released in November 2010. But along with that came the announcement that they were doing, as part of the project, they did a concert in late 2010. I'm not sure the exact date, but they did a live recording of the concert, and that recording was released on both DVD and CD in April 2010. And so, to bring sort of the story in full context, they've recorded the album, they've done the live version, but that was, they didn't start touring straight away. They actually didn't start touring until April 2011. And their first date on their Classic Petra World Tour was once again the Great Land Down Under. Down here at the Easter Festival, I've talked about attending this, what was now called Easter Fest, but previously known as the Australian Gospel Music Festival in the town of Toowoomba in Queensland, Australia. I once again drove 12, 13 hours just to go and see this one concert. And it was the first concert of the tour. They went from here, they did Toowoomba, they did Perth, and then they started the rest of the world tour. So we were the kickoff of that world tour. And I was so excited to be there, to be a part of it and to hear them live. It was absolutely fantastic.
Well, they're kind of this like second spiritual home for the band. It feels like it's really gratifying.
What really encouraged me was the fact that Bob didn't even remember coming down here for that one. When we did the interview with Bob Hartman, he's like, "We came to Australia? Really? I don't remember that."
Well, travel's a bigger deal when you're getting to that age. But all right, now first things first, Dave. Got to address this. Get this back on the way. Back to the Rock album cover. What are your thoughts about it?
Well, I love that they brought back the classic logo. I love the logo with the sword, the Petra with the sword as the T, and that classic Petra logo. I think it's fantastic. And then they've got the word classic across the sword. You know, the rest of it, it's interesting outside of it. It's hard to work out if it's sort of supposed to be sort of, you know, the guitar and the words Back to the Rock, if it's supposed to be lava or a fire, or I'm not quite sure. It does seem, you know, you've got sort of the clouds in the background. It's almost like a sunset image there with this idea that, you know, the band is in the forefront. It's not too complicated, but it certainly stands out.
Yeah, I read somewhere one of the reflections on it was that they described it as an alien landscape. And I think we're stretching it a bit to tie it into sort of some of the other Petra album covers of the era of, or the original era of this band, this lineup. I don't know. I think that's a bit of a stretch. Like you, it just seems kind of like a volcanic motif to me. It almost, it seems to me a little bit like a little bit of a fusion of, like there's an element there with that particular band logo, and certainly on fiery imagery that actually makes me think or connects me mentally more to On Fire. This Means War lineup, you know, so the early Schlitt era,
yeah,
and that, you know, 80s edge kind of hair metal, or, you know, kind of rock sense that they were going for, rather than the era that this band actually did, which, you know, as you all know, I'm a big fan of the Flying Guitar album covers. That's what their era was. And this really isn't that. And that's not to, you know, not to dismiss it out of hand. It's a fine album cover. It's certainly not like going to be bottom of my list. But it just seems some odd choices. Almost kind of like, you know, it's like the band members Googled images that kind of related to the band Petra or classic Petra imagery and just kind of cobbled together a few of the images without a real thought of tying in a story or a theme. And yeah, like I admit that not every effort that the band ever made to have a story happening with their album covers was successful. But most of the other ones were at least given it a real good shot and they were trying something. And this time it just kind of felt like just the last thing they had to get done before getting the albums out.
Yeah, that's almost the feeling I get. It's a little bit of the, we've got to do an album cover. Oh, we've got to do it quick. It's interesting because I actually think what they pulled together for the live version of the album, the cover that was on the live version with the pictures from the concert, I think almost would have been fitting for this one its own. I mean, the back cover of the studio version has a picture from the concert.
Yeah.
It almost might have been fitting to have that on the front, like to have the band shown, or to have some of those images that they used on the follow-up. And just to for full disclosure for everyone, we are, as we said before, we are covering in this whole episode, we're incorporating all versions of the Back to the Rock album. So we're talking about the studio version of Back to the Rock and the live version of Back to the Rock coupled with the DVD, because it really is one Ministry release. So they could have used what they did for the live version for the studio version. I think it would have been just as acceptable. I do prefer the live version cover to this one.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's almost that odd thing. And like, I always hesitate to think of things too much in terms of marketing. But from a marketing standpoint, like for this album cover, it's kind of what you really want to be selling or promoting is this lineup of the band. Mm-hmm. It's really the kind of cover, even if you're trying to get creative or tap into old imagery, it's those faces. It's those five faces that you need, that you really want to be selling the idea of coming back to check this album out. Oh my goodness, they got these guys back together. That's awesome. What they've kind of gone for is just the general idea of like Petra. Everyone's going to come for Petra, but there's nothing really that distinguishes this cover from, say, the Rock Block, which was one of their compilation releases. And compilations are great and they're kind of best ofs, and they're just there to keep the band in the public consciousness and stuff. And I had that one. But it's not really driving home that the album has a personality of its own. And that's something about this, is like, yes, it's a compilation album of sorts, but it has a personality of its own. This collection of songs actually ties together really, really well, not necessarily in the thematic way that the old albums were always structured, where we were able to trace this line of the gospel message that Bob's weaving through the songs through an album. Not so much here, but certainly the way that they have recorded it and they've done the arrangements for this album, like tie them together really, really nicely, and lift the material for the most part, lift the material. So here I am. I'm like, I start wanting to ask you about what the album cover looks like. We end up just wanting to talk more about the songs, which,
So getting back to the cover, where we got? We've got two covers to list here. So the studio version, the first version, what do you compare it to? What do you feel it's closest to from what we've seen before?
I don't know. I mean, it's like in its form, it's closest to On Fire, but I wouldn't put it near On Fire.
How do you compare it to like a God Fixation or an Unseen Power, which had that very basic imagery of the band on it?
That's a tough one. Like I'd probably rate it beneath both, even though God Fixation, I have that slight issue of, how the band is styled, but it's still saying more.
Would you have it above Come and Join Us?
Yeah, I might put it above Come and Join Us.
Okay, so that's where the first classic one's going to come in. What about the live version? I think the live version's got a little bit more to it because of those pictures. So I'm feeling that it jumps up a little bit from that, but I'm not sure it's as good as you Never Say Die. So
No. So, I mean, no, like I.
So like we come back to like Back to the Street or the original Petra album. Where do you compare it to those two?
Yeah, I'd probably put it above Back to the Street.
What about Revival?
I'd put it above Revival. I've never been particularly blown away by Revival. Yeah,
and I think that's where it sits. It comes in underneath Never Say Die, but above. Okay, so then, if we look at that, then that basically brings us in that the classic album cover, we're ranking in at number 11 all time, just below Never Say Die. And the classic studio version that we've been talking about is coming in at number 17, below Unseen Power, but above Come and Join Us. And I'm going to put all these at the end of the project. I'm going to put all these lists out on the Facebook page and the community for everyone to see. We've referenced them, and I don't want to spend 5 minutes going through the whole list, everyone. So please bear with us. But yeah, that's not bad. Look, I think the live album really. I think that's a strong showing with the live version album cover.
Yeah. No, I'd agree with that.
All right. Well, I think, it's time to start looking into what we're getting out in this album. As we said, you're bringing back this core team from Captured in Time and Space. And in the full live version, if you've listened to it, so as I said, there's a studio version. There's a brief live version, which just doesn't have any of the talking between songs. And then there's a full extended live version, which you can find on Spotify, digital versions. That was only released digitally, the full extended version. And that's also what's on the DVD. And that includes the band members, different band members talking between them. And I think one of the keys was Greg. One of the things that really stood out to me was Greg saying that part of this idea. Band to do this album with a desire to reach the prodigals, to reach out to the people who have perhaps walked with the Lord before but maybe have fallen away a little bit, probably who you know, by using this ministry where they're going, this is, you probably knew us back then, you were walking with the Lord and you've fallen away. Well, we're back. Here are the songs that you knew and love. We've given them a little bit of a different feel, and we're hoping that this might help draw you back to the Lord. I think that's really what the heart of this album is about.
Mm. In that regard, Bema Seat is a very appropriate opener. Now we talked way back about, you know, sometimes growing up, like the oddity of the language, sometimes it gets chosen, you know, Bema Seat is not, you know, a heavily well-used biblical doctrine, but it is a biblical image, and it does tie in nicely the judgment throne of God, and the reminder that one day we're all going to stand before it. So, you know, in whose name do you get to stand when you go there? Mm. This is one that I, in my immediate reaction is, it's an odd choice. I'm a little surprised. Oh, you guys want to do Bema Seat. And that's when I'm looking at the list on the back of the album. However, when you put in the album and that initial riff opens up for Bema Seat, it's like, oh no, that's perfect. It's of course you choose this one. It's an amazing riff.
It is. And it really, I think it really allows them to highlight what they're trying to do with this version, with these updated versions, because both this and the live version having that sort of little introduction that comes before it, talking about how, you know, they, you know, the people came back to the Lord, you know, like there was that sort of little spoken thing before the intro. It is a very clear, distinct upgrade of the sound quality and the style, but a lot heavier on the guitar, a little bit more distortion. The keys are a little bit more padded and not as distinct, not as in your face as they were on that original version, and it really has a nice blended sound. You can really hear a distinct difference in this to the original recording.
They're doing something to Louis' drums, that like something in the way they're mic'd, or whether they're just adding some reverb to it. Mm. But that boom, like the drum beat, like that starts up, boom, boom. Yeah. It's got an echo to it, or a reverb to it, that really, really fills out the sound and is really. Oh, I mean, it gets your heart like beating out your chest. It's such a good choice. For how they did that element of production.
And I think it's really pretty big to point out that, you know, we spoke about this when we talked about Not of This World and Beat the System, but a lot of the songs on this album, Louis and Mark didn't get to play in the original recordings. They were benched, and so this is their opportunity. And Louis wasn't involved in the studio recording of Never Say Die because he hadn't fully joined the band at that point. So I think this is a great opportunity. I think Louis was really probably just enjoying the opportunity to lay down some of these songs that he didn't get that previous chance to. And it really, you can really tell that the sound's coming through. And what I like is, yeah, it really comes out, that sound of the band and the strong guitar, the great guitar. What a great song to launch into with a really strong guitar solo. This is who Petra is. You know, strong guitars supported by a great keyboard sound, great bass playing, drums filling it out, and Greg's voice coming through.
Yeah, and the guy is sounding as crisp as he has ever sounded. It's it's really remarkable for a guy who's a tenor with as high a range as he has, and that really hasn't faded over time.
We'll get into that a little bit later, because I think there are several songs on the album that it's very clear that he doesn't quite have the range that he used to, and that's understandable. I'm not knocking that as a, you know, I mean, he's an older guy. And you can hear there are some songs that he's just not quite reaching it the way he used to. But yes, he still sounds fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of those ones. I don't discern a great deal of difference between the studio recording and the live version, other than obviously you've got a crowd reaction mixed in a little bit.
Yeah, and just that slight, that intro, that live intro that they've used. But outside of that, they're pretty well exactly the same.
Yeah, that's it. The one thing that there's an element, and I keep thinking when I listen to the live version, I keep thinking as the riff builds up, I'm actually hearing an air raid siren starting up. I'm not, but it's got that feeling of this crescendo of a warning, and then they knocked it out of the park on the first song. Like, it's
absolutely
it's a great way to start. They go into one of my absolute favorites of their era of the rock songs. Clean is just such a solid, awesome rock piece, and I'm so glad it's on this album. And I would go as far to say, I really have always liked the Captured in Time and Space version of it, but I think this recording, they're playing with just a hint more edge to it, just a little more aggression. Sort of, I don't know if that's the right word, but
I like that. Yeah, that's probably a nice way of putting it. I noted that it is very similar to the Captured in Time and Space version, but I think it's a little harder. I think it's a little bit harder, a little bit slightly more guitar centric. Than what we got on Captured in Time and Space. I think it's important. We noted when we did our Captured in Time and Space episode, go back into the archives, listen to it if you haven't. Really encourage you, catch up on all the history. But we noted that it really came across that live version allowed them to play some of these songs, perhaps the way the band felt they should have been recorded in the studio version. We talked about the difference between Captured in Time and Space and Beat the System. I feel this is where they've absolutely nailed it.
Yeah.
I feel they've absolutely nailed this version. This is the way I think Bob really wished that song would have been on Beat the System. And this is the band bringing it, going, this is how we want this song to sound. There's no producer element here. This is us.
No, I agree with that, and again, that this is one where I think the live, the show, like has might have a little of an advantage or edges above the recorded version, just slightly, and a part of that is because it's one of those songs that's got that the lyric of it. And the rhythm of the lyric is such a way that allows an element of audience interaction or a pause, breaks for the audience to kind of respond and feel the groove. And the way Greg sings it live, again, he's got a bit more punch. A bit
more energy.
He's clipping it. He's giving it a bit more energy. You might see me stumble. You might see me fall. And it's just one of those times where very, over enunciating his words is actually lending a really great flavor to it live. So,
All right. Well, This next song, I was so excited that this was on it, because this is a song that we had never had on a live version. And this is a song that just, I've always enjoyed this song. I've talked about it before, but Angel of Light, just updating it just a little bit, bringing that slightly harder style guitar sound to it, that modern guitar sound to it. Really, it really has an impact. I love the way they do the intro in this. I think it's fantastic. And what I think is even better is if you listen to it in depth, Mark Kelly on the bass, he brings a whole different element to bass playing in this song that wasn't on the studio version. On the original version of the album back on Never Say Die. It's absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed this version. One of the interesting things, we talk about differences. I actually prefer for these releases, I actually prefer the studio version to the live version.
Okay.
Because in the studio version, they actually do some effects on the drums during the breakdown part of the Angel of Light, you know, at the sort of the third, you know, when they're at the back end of the song and they break down and nothing's playing but the drums, you get this effect on the drums that they're using, almost like a slide in on the drum. And it sounds really cool and I really liked it. And it's something that they probably weren't able to utilize in the live version because, you know, you can't normally do an effect on a drum kit live. So yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's good. It's the version, you know, you listen to it this way and then you realize you've always wanted it to sound like this and you've always been faintly disappointed in the original recording of it, and you never realized until now. But you're right. It just brings this, actually, you know, kind of makes, this is the kind of thing I would love in, you know, if the Dream Team would give this one a shot. I'd love to hear this with John Schlitt singing and just that real, that late 80s, you know, crunch to it. But this, yeah, this is just a great way of doing it. One of the classics, one of the real standards for the band. No surprise that you would put this on the album.
No, absolutely. But I think to me, this was the first inkling of, you can hear Greg doesn't have the range that he used to have because it's during the coda section, you know, you've got the clergy working overtime to write, you know, that's where he's not quite nailing it as high as he used to.
Yeah. And he's clipping his words there a lot, so he doesn't have to sustain high notes. Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's thing. And the other thing that I noted on the live version, this is the first song that's noticeable, is it's very clear that either when they've done this album, when they've done the live version, they are either utilizing, and we talked about this a little bit in Farewell, they're either utilizing a backing track or they're doing some post-production work, because you can clearly hear two distinct guitar sounds being played during the guitar solo. You can hear Bob playing the guitar solo, but underneath it, you can hear the guitar riff being played, like the chords being played straight. And as talented as Bob is, I know he can't do both at once.
It's just
that element that you notice.
They never strike me as the type that would do post work for a live release. That's kind of a vanity thing as far as I'm concerned. But, you know, like Bob could have an effects, like a looping pedal. You just play his riff, save the loop of his riff, and then he can add it later on in the song. He's still kind of in control of that, but
it's quite possible.
It is a recorded effect, but still, it's really, really good. Just, I know I said before, like there was no, like, you know, they're not like a natural, easily narrative to this album, but I'm all of a sudden starting to look at this and think, I don't know. You're reminding people who have maybe walked away, and you're calling them back, and you're reminding of the judgment. Then you're promising them that you can come back and you can be made clean. you're challenging that, like, you maybe you've been deceived in what you're thinking. And now we're walking into, now look, let's tackle the issue of hypocrisy in the church, which is an issue. Again, we get one of the, I've always kind of felt this is one of the dark horse songs of Petra, in that it is, it's brilliant, it's a winner, and more people love this song than I you know, I might sometimes realize. But Rose-Colored Stained Glass Windows, it always feels like one that I don't naturally think of it when I'm thinking of the greatest songs, but it really is a, you know, it's long been a favorite of mine, and, you know, it's kind of great to see it here. One of those just wonderful, playful opening riffs that you know, like a two-part interchanging or interweaving riff that Bob does, that's very, very recognizable. And yeah,
I like how they've updated this, they've updated this song from the recording on More Power to You, because the original recording has that organ sound sort of playing, you know, da, 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 da. And then the guitar picking comes in underneath over the top of it, and then they go into that, the acoustic part, and then into the rock part. Here we've got a more orchestral sound, so not an organ feel, but an orchestral sound, which actually creates a very, very interesting feel at that start. And then again, we get the acoustic coming over the top of that, and then the rock element plowing in on the second time through.
It's very, it's a lot more somber. Like, that original one was clearly playing off, like, I think that original organ piece might have been Wide as the Ocean. I think is the song that's being played, but it's clearly trying to tap into that thing of, like, all right, he's your classic image of a church and the kind of music that you'll get in church. Now we want to point a big finger in your face. Whereas this one is almost like, we want to talk about something serious that hurts. And we're all guilty of it. So, I think one thing I know, like, impressively, is, like, you know, Bob's recall for how he has played this song over the years is impeccable. Like, you know, note for note, this is identical to, you know, his original recording and stuff. Like, his sort of the solo work, it's just played with a heavier hand.
Yeah, but the guitar solo itself is outstanding. Yes. The actual improvisational solo is just outstanding. This is brilliant, this one. It just takes it to another level.
Yeah, I absolutely agree.
All right. So we're really I think this message is starting to come through, that we're pointing the light that people need to be turning back to God. There's different elements, different ways. We need to be clean. We don't want to be deceived. As a church, we need to move away from hypocrisy, and we need to be reaching out to people. And then we bring it back to what we want to be doing is, we want to be pleasing God.
And we get
the return of God pleaser.
Which, you know, it's one of those ones that I've never rated the song that highly myself. I don't have anything against it, but it also, at the same time, it feels very naturally one that would be on this. This feels like a Greg pick. I don't quite know why, but this is when I'm like, this is Greg picking this song, I think. And that might just be because of, because every time I think of the song, I always think of his little playfulness in Caption and Time and Space, like when he starts calling out to the audience, what do you want to be? You don't want to be a, you want to be a, and
to me, this is probably the first song on this entire whether the studio or the live, this is the first song where I actually go, you know what? I think I still prefer the Captured in Time and Space version. I think I prefer it a little bit over this one. This one, when you compare the two songs, the two ways of doing it, I feel this one's just a little more mechanical. It almost feels like this is how we've got to do it, whereas the Captured in Time and Space felt a little bit more fluid and a little bit more...
Well, it's good that it's got that wonderful lead-in in Captured in Time and Space where he's just like Lowry's just sustaining a pad and creating an atmosphere, and like the riff comes in like that dun dun dun, and then we're gonna hold again, we're not in a rhythm, we're not in a song, we're just giving you some space, and they have this slow roll into the song that actually really elevates the whole song. Like Captured in Time and Space over the Beat the System recording is
Never Say Die, not of this world recording,
but it's phenomenal. This, like, again, to kind of, it's the one thing when you're in the live context and you can be a bit free and a bit loose and just explore the space. But when you're in a studio and it's just you recording into a can, you've got it's like, okay, well, we got to start the song at some point and we got to finish it at some point. So let's start. You can't recreate like a spontaneous live vibe in the studio.
But once again, I must say, I really enjoy the bass work of Mark Kelly on this song. He's just hearing what he does, what he's been doing on these songs, really, I think, highlights what an opportunity was missed when the producers made the decision to not utilize him on the recordings of Not of This World and Beat the System, because he's very talented, not just as a bass player, but as a backing vocalist. And it really comes through in these re-recordings. You really hear some fantastic bass work going on when you're actually listening out for it.
That's right. Perhaps appropriately, this idea, the next song in the theme, as we're talking about, if you're going to go through all this stuff, Bob phrasing it here, it's like receiving a second wind in life. And sometimes that's something that people just even need in their faith, even if not necessarily people have walked away from God, but just have had a season of feeling a slump in their thing. You need a second wind. I mean, that's what the song has always been about. This is another one that I kind of like, I'm a little surprised at. I don't know that I ever would have pegged this. I wonder if this is a Bob pick. This is another one where I note a slight edge in the way they play it over the original recording. Or quite an edge, actually.
Yeah. I think the big difference is the big difference from the original recording on More Power to You and this version is the sound of the keyboards that John Lowry's putting out. There's a really, really updated sound. And then the keyboard solo that comes with it. It is very reminiscent of what John Slick did on More Power to You, but just with a bit of a different feel to a different sound that was coming through. And I think it softened the keyboard sound a little bit, not in a bad way, but it sort of just created a slightly different feel to it, and probably slight more emphasis on the guitars than what was on the original recording.
I go along with that, and this is one I kind of get a lot of enthusiasm from Greg in this song as well, which is this, I don't know, it feels like it's a shade faster. It's a shade more up tempo. I could be wrong on that though. I could be miss.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe it's just the feel they've put in that little bit extra might just add a bit more to it. What I like before we move on to the next song, what I like is on the extended live version, we get some really good stories from Bob come out at this point of the extended version. Bob talking about how they're using the actual stage set that was from Captured in Time and Space, and the story of how that all came about. Did you take the time to listen in on that?
No, well, I mean, yeah, no.
So basically, for some reason, I haven't heard the extended version, guys, go and listen to it. But Bob basically says that after the Captured in Time and Space tour, they wanted to store the set, and Greg contacted a pastor at a church in Texas somewhere, and the pastor said, yeah, we can use it and stuff, and if you ever need it, it's here. So 25 years later, they reach out to this church, and the pastor is still there, and the stage is still there. So it's just a God moment, and he talks about how that all came about. And then the other element is Bob talks about how he used to live not far away from where they were recording that night, and sort of encouraged everyone to maybe go and visit the house, and then said maybe that the owners might call the police on him. But just Bob's little humor, his humor comes out, his dry sense of humor just comes out as he tells these stories. But you can hear it, the Bob seems to be enjoying the experience of being with these guys again and performing with these guys again. It comes through when he's talking.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we're on to, you know, the great encourager. In the running for probably the most meaningful song for me personally in Petra's entire discography, more power to you. One of the perennial favorites.
I liked what they did with this song. That it seemed a little simpler than the original recording at the start of the song. Like they've kept the sound a little simpler, and then they build it little by little through the song. So it never overpowers, but that they just allow the different elements to come out at each stage. It's sort of each verse and chorus just builds a little bit more. But I really like how simple they kept it at the start. They didn't overpower it.
Yeah. I think this is, and maybe like a testament to the writing of the song, like, and the way that it was put together from the beginning. But the farewell concert kind of highlighted that this is a song that it works any way you want to do it. You can strip everything back and go acoustic, and it's got every bit as much the power and the heart. This is almost one, like, it would be difficult to do a bad version of it. Like for this project, like, you know, they could have tried to double take it, and that might have not have gone over well, but no, they didn't. They're just like, let's, you know, it's a mellow one. We're doing a mellow song, but yeah, you know, it doesn't need a lot of production tricks to assist it. It doesn't need a lot of, even in playing, it's like, we don't need to embellish or flourish too much as musicians on this one. It's all in the text of the song.
Yeah. And I think it's good. I think it's good that they didn't go out of their way to update every single song that they did. This one really just, it sounds so much like the original, but that's not a bad thing.
Mm. Now I feel a little conflicted about the next one, because in my head I never think of Let Everything That Hath Breath. apart from Praise Ye the Lord and what's the third one?
Without him, we can do nothing.
Like, I can't. I always picture as this trio of songs that go together, and it feels wrong just to have one of them on their own here. And why choose this one over the other two? That's a minor nitpick, so I'm not really holding it against this album. But this is what I'm not terribly surprised to see on there. One of, like, we kind of termed them as Greg's worship songs.
Yeah, look, this is enjoyable. It's strong. It's very similar to what you hear on Captured in Time and Space, but we get the full song here. So Captured in Time and Space, you get your verse and chorus. Here we get the full song. And it just sounds like they're having fun on this song. It sounds like they're really enjoying themselves. So I'm going to take the moment now to diverge us off this album for a moment, because when they were live in Australia, because we talked about, well, there are two songs here that they didn't do. Why choose this one or not the other one? So when they toured here in Australia, we got two of the three, because live, not on this one, but they did Without Him, We Can Do Nothing. And they did it the style that was done on the Captured in Time and Space live video DVD recording, which has all the extra little call out bits without him, we can do nothing. Yeah. And then they've got the band playing, down, without him, we can do ow. And that sort of whole bit. And they did that whole number live in Australia. It was awesome to experience. It's a shame they didn't include it on the album. And then they followed that up with another song that's not on this album. And much to my disappointment, it wasn't on this album. And we've talked about this song before, but because when they were in Australia, it was Easter weekend, and before going into Grave Robber, they did All Over Me. And that was fantastic live. That was sensational. And it made me think, when you look at what they've included on this album and what's been left off, I think those two songs may have been like the last two, or maybe the last two that were sort of like not voted in. Like, it was almost like maybe they just didn't quite have enough votes to get in, because it was just so awesome to hear those. And it made me think, before we go on and sort of look at the last four songs on this album, Lindsay, what is there any other song that you go, gee, that one might have just missed out? Like, I'm surprised that one wasn't included on this album.
If you're asking me that question right now, I'll tell you, I'm surprised that Judas Kiss didn't make it onto the album.
Yeah.
I am very surprised that Judas Kiss didn't make it onto the album. But again, it's that thing of, like, if this is about favorite, like, I'm sure it was on like five different men here. I'm sure one of them had Judas Kiss on there somewhere. And it might just have been that thing of, like, what people enjoy playing. I was about to ask you, like, considering Let Everything That Have Breath, would you swap this out for either Without Him We Can Do Nothing or Praise Ye the Lord? Like, are either of those other two songs that you kind of, like, I actually would have preferred to hear that rather than this? Or
I think our history with those three songs show that we've got them ranked back to back to back anyway on our list. As I said, I like, perhaps if you're going to do you're doing the whole version of one of the songs, I think maybe Let Everything That Hath Breath might be the strongest song from an overall perspective, beginning to end, the second verse and chorus in it. Maybe So I'm not, I don't know that I'd have the one of the other two over this one for a full version. But I would have loved to have heard, I would have loved to have seen the whole medley live.
Sure. And like, what are, like, are there other songs that you're kind of like, you know, I'm surprised that they didn't put this on.
I think, you know, that probably ties it. I think the Without Him and Praise You the Lord, All Over Me and Judas Kiss. I think they're the four songs that I'm like, if you're looking at songs going, not saying that I would dump any other song off this album, but if there was a song that, like, if you'd asked me before it came out, oh, they've put 10 songs on it that they've chosen, like 10 favorite songs, what do you think they've picked? I probably would have had, I would have thought, well, I wouldn't surprise, those four would have been strong contenders, I think, for to be on the album.
What about, you wouldn't have thought the Colouring Song?
No. No, I wouldn't have put the Colouring Song on there.
No, I'm not surprised either, but.
But getting back to the album and getting back to what is on the album and getting back to a song that I think would have been the absolute, everyone would have picked to be on this album.
Yes.
This is the next song.
Without hesitation.
And before we get to the song on this, on the extended version, once again, Mark Kelly gets to introduce the song. And I love that we come back to this idea that Mark Kelly introduced it in Captured in Time and Space and introduces it again here. And he's introducing it with a very emotional story about his family passing away, members of his family passing away, and how that touched him and how he's going to see them again. And it's a really great way to introduce this amazing song, which is, of course, Grave Robber.
Mm.
All right.
Now, we've talked about this song a lot in the time that we've been doing this. This is one of your all-timers, maybe the all-timer for you. It occupies, does it occupy our number one spot? I keep forgetting.
We'll get to that in a moment. I'm just pulling up the list now. It does not occupy the top spot. It is actually number three on our list, but it is our number one song sung by Greg.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's very, very indelibly tied in with this era of the band and stuff. But such a powerful song, such a beautiful song. Never get sick of listening to it.
I like that they've tried to just add a few different elements. They haven't just done it the exact same way as they've done it before. There are a couple of different elements. Especially a lot of use of some different things that John Lowry does with the keys and the pads underneath the guitar sound. It is clear they've just tried to, look, we're not just going to do it exactly the same. It would be very easy to do it exactly the same, but they've just done a few little different slight things that just round the sound out quite nicely. And they really get a really good band sound in this song, really a really full sound. But unfortunately, like we spoke about a little bit in Farewell, this is probably the most noticeable of Greg's inability to hit the higher end notes that were reminiscent of the Not of This World and the Captured in Time and Space version. It is clear. In fact, in certain spots, he even sings it. Sing some of the lines.
He brings it down the octave. Yeah.
Yeah.
He doesn't go for that high, like during the flourishes during the end that he used to just soar and let it rip. Yeah. It's clear he's pitching a lot lower. I don't know that it necessarily detracts from the song.
No, not at all. Not at all. But if you're comparing the two, I prefer the Captured in Time and Space version for the mere fact that he can hit those notes.
Yeah.
But one thing I do like is the way they finish it on this version. You don't just get that, you don't get the fade out just on the keys. Like you actually have the guitar playing a little bit more, and that sort of the return to the finger picking at the end of the song rather than just letting it fade away. So I quite like that. That just they've done a couple of things different and something new, something fresh.
Well, talking about something fresh, Dave, and you have been chomping at the bit ever since we did Beat the System to be able to talk about this version of this song. You have been hanging for this moment so long, which is completely understandable, because this is Adonai, and the difference between the Beat the System recording and then this recording and then the live version of this recording is they are different songs. This is like, this is the difference between the original theatrical release of Kingdom of Heaven and then the director's release of Kingdom of Heaven. And that's a deep cut for so many of you. You're just going to be like, what? But trust me, if you, they are two completely different movies, and this is two completely different songs. This is what lends credence to the theory of like Beat the System should be redone as a straight rock album. Yeah. Because that's what Bob writes for. And to take what Bob writes for and then say, hey, we're going to produce a synthwave version. It's an interesting thought experiment, but this shows the gulf between the outcome.
Absolutely. This is just the first two words in my notes are this rocks.
Yeah.
This song is so much better on the classic Petra album than it was original. The guitar playing is unbelievable. It is just totally awesome. The way the riff is played at the start, the guitar leading it in rather than the keyboard leading it in, it is just so Petra. It is Bob. It is the sound that Petra is known for, and it just it plays out the. The riff of the song, the way it's done, it is just absolutely sensational. The guys on it, Louis is outstanding in this song. Louis, the drum, the Louis gets to bring himself to this song, which was not, you know, we had programmed drums on the original version. Here we have a real man playing this song with heart. Mark adds some great elements on the bass that are missing in the original. The backing vocals complement the song. And what really stands out to me is this is one of the few songs on the album where the vocal range does not suffer in any way. It is out of this world. It is unbelievable. It is so much better than the original. And when we get to the song list shortly and we talk about this, in my mind, I think we have a genuine contender to knock off into the number one spot all time. That is how good this version of this song is.
It really is. Like this is one that, you know, again, at a glance, looking at the song list, you look at Adonai and you think, why on earth would they pick Adonai? Like, how does that sit in here? But yeah, it's just, I mean, this is like, you know, it's like when a band comes in and covers another band's song and then they do it so well that everyone's like, oh, well, the song belongs to this new band now. And Petra have done it for themselves here. And I hope there's that sense of satisfaction about being able to do it this way and present it. It's one of the songs live. You can feel, you can see the vibe and the energy. And I can only imagine how this must impact a crowd hearing hearing this live and you know.
Yeah, it's a praise and worship song being done, like being lifted up to God. I mean, I think it's why I think the live version is even a little bit better than the studio recording for these classic albums. It's just outstanding. And it almost feels like, I don't know, there's almost an element of me where I think when they started talking about let's re-record, let's do this, if Bob almost went, Adonai, we must do it. It's bang, because I want to do it the way it should have been done originally. It really feels like this is doing the song justice.
Well, it is that. And because you could argue that the rest of Beat the System got that treatment on Captured in Time and Space for the most part. But Adonai was the one that was left off, at least the recordings. And I have no idea what they might have done touring over the years, whether they ever brought it in and did it live in some places, but certainly laying it down here is, mwah, thank you, Bob. That's a brilliant choice.
Yep, absolutely. Well, we move from our 10 classic songs to our two new songs for Petra. The first of which, as I've mentioned, is actually not brand new in its way. It's actually released by Greg X Vols on one of his solo albums. On that album, the song was just known as The Rock. But it's here it is, recorded by Petra as Petra. Just as a side note, a very interesting fact. In preparing for this recording, one of the things I did was I built a playlist of all the songs on this album in their original form, like from the original recordings, just because I wanted to hear the difference. When I went to listen to it again today, I discovered, for some reason, Spotify no longer has Greg X Vols' full discography. It's gone. It's obviously happened in the last week because I was listening to it last week. And so I wasn't able to listen to this again today in the original version. But, yeah, this is a Greg song. This is written by Greg. You can tell it's written by Greg, because it's very much what you get in a Greg X Vols song. Scripture put to music, like lines, whether they rhyme or not, scripture versus just straight there. There it is, bang. We're putting the scripture out there. Here it is.
Yeah, yeah. It was a fun one. Like I didn't realize, I remember my first hearing of this, and for a while when I was listening to this album, I was constantly going, which Petra album is this one from? I'm drawing a blank on this. This must be, and it was a while before I discovered that it was, it was one of Greg's. A very fitting, a very fitting sort of song. It suits them quite well. And there's that little bit of, a little tap of history. Like, I joked about the coloring song a moment ago, and but again, the story of I mean, that was one of Petra's biggest singles at that time. Yeah. That was a huge release for them, and that was something that Greg shepherded into the band. It wasn't, Bob didn't write it, and Greg brought it in, and it's just a nice another little nod tie into that. It's like, well, I've got something that I think suits us well. If you're happy to give this one a shot, and obviously everyone was.
I think there's an element where the song fits the concept of we're back. Like it's that idea of, like they said, wanting to bring people back to the Lord, and even this idea of the band being back, and that concept of, like we just said, almost bring back that rock element to some of the songs that was missing. Here is a song that is about coming back to the rock that is higher than I, take me, bring me back to the Lord. I want to come to the world. I want to drink from you, Lord. I drink the water that never runs out, and just allow you to fill me and grow me. And I'm going to keep coming back to you. And I think, that there's, it fits the band and what they were doing for this album.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I say the same of the next one, which now, do I understand right? Bob wrote this. This is a Bob song. Written for this project.
Written for this project.
Yeah. So,
And you can tell that Too Big to Fail is a Bob song. When you compare the two songs, Back to the Rock is a very, there's a full band sound. The band are all playing. It's just a sort of a flowy progression, but there's none of that real strong riff element to it. Mm. Too Big to Fail is a Bob song.
Yeah.
It's got that guitar riff lead in it. It's got the power rock that's coming through in the chorus. It almost feels like a song that might have been partly written for Jekyll and Hyde, but never quite, maybe wasn't quite finished.
I was going to say the same because, you know, there's that element of Bob's style over the year. Like, he was very adaptable to the team that he was playing with. He wrote differently to highlight different things, and he adapted. Like, it was always rock, but it was shifting, it was nuanced. Too Big to Fail feels like, yes, like it's something that could have been massaged and fit into Jekyll and Hyde, could have been something that went well in the Wake Up Call era. I feel like there's a little bit of that going on there.
The style of the song and the style of the melody, it sounds like something you can hear John Schlitt singing.
Yeah, easily.
I think we noted this when we did Back to the Street. We talked about how a lot of the songs felt like you could hear they were probably written for Greg's style of voice, but we had a new singer. This almost feels the reverse. It almost feels like this was written for John Schlitt, but Greg got to sing it.
Yeah, well, in fairness, he'd been writing for John for 20 years at this point. So, you know, it's one of those cases where, you know, I've reflected a lot over Bob sort of building a song, starting with a common phrase or an expression in popular culture, in this case, Too Big to Fail, and building something around that concept. And he always does it well, and he always does it scripturally, and it's always a wonderful thing. This is one of the few times where, you know, in fact, the only occasion where I look at it and I'm like, Bob, are you puffing your chest up a little bit just this one time in your career? Because it's like, you know, he's always working with dual meanings. And yes, obviously the song, the lyric is Our God is Too Big to Fail. But is Bob also kind of going, and, you know, Petra, we're too big to fail. So we know this is going to go over well. And not, you know, I'm not saying he's arrogant, because that's the last thing I would ever use to describe him.
No.
And after, at this point, nearly 40 years of doing what he does, the guy's earned a victory lap.
And that does feel like this, because this song is just lyrically and musically, it is a really strong song.
It really is.
We're proclaiming the name of the Lord. I love the little pre-chorus. He reigns from his throne on high. He reigns over you and I. I testify. We're proclaiming this. This is who Petra are. We are proclaiming who God is. He is too big. He is too great. And the chorus just rocks out. Too big. Bang. Too big. Bang. Our God is too big. It's just, this is a really good song. We talked before about, we talked on Jekyll and Hyde. We talked on, we've talked multiple times about the last song. This is the last thing that they put out there. Well, this is the last song that we have that Bob has written. And it's a statement. It's like a mission statement of the ministry of the band. It's a mission statement of the style of music and of who Bob is. And it is a really strong way to finish the album and Bob's role in the ministry of the band.
Yeah, well said.
In terms of releases, I say obviously there's still, you know, we've got the concerts and stuff, but you know where I'm coming from.
Yeah, I do. No, yeah, absolutely. Right, well, it's time for the big questions, Dave.
Where does this sit? Where does this sit?
I guess the natural comparison point for the albums, for both of the albums, really is probably Farewell. Like, we're really looking at that same kind of thing there. And the question, I always get a little cautious about, you know, reviewing this kind of thing, because nostalgia plays such a huge part of how we regard these kind of projects. And yeah, it's yeah, you're in danger of this place where you're not producing anything really fresh or lively or new, because you're just going over old material. Now Petra hasn't actually fallen into that, I don't think so, but it also makes it hard to really compare when you're doing a victory lap, a greatest hits, even as a new fresh project. How do you hold this up against you know, like stuff that was written and done as fresh and new and original? It's hard
because we've got upgrades on song styles, which, you know, that can come down to preference, because there'll be people who'll be listening to this going, I much prefer the original recording. And that's a preference, and sure, that's fine. I think when I compare the two, and I look at the classic Petras, I think when we're going to look at the album where we rank this as an album, we're almost combining the studio and the live version into one thing and just saying it's one release here.
There's not enough difference between the two.
No, we did two album covers, but this is one release. I think there are some elements of this project that I used the term earlier, like Second Wind and God Pleaser felt a little mechanical, just felt a little going through the motion. And I feel some of the song choices, Greg's vocal, having to change the way he did the vocals was quite evident. Whereas I felt Farewell didn't suffer as much from that. And I think Farewell perhaps was just a little bit stronger in its combined thing, or maybe bringing in that medley probably helped Farewell as well. So I'm not sure I would rank this project above Farewell.
And that's fair enough. Farewell's also got like a bigger scope for what it's celebrating there. Like you know, this is has a smaller window that they're looking at. Which is great. I mean, I guess there's that thing of like, if you really wanted to take it step by step, you go, is this, you know, is this better than Beat the System? Yes.
You know? Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, you progress from there, kind of, maybe.
Well, I think it's at the upper end of the scale. I think your progression is backwards. You know, I don't think it quite hits as strong as Farewell. Sitting behind Farewell is More Power to You, which was a sensational album beginning to end.
Yeah, I wouldn't bump it for this.
Okay. Then we've got Jekyll and Hyde. And I still hold Jekyll and Hyde is just, I think there's elements of that. You know, Too Big to Fail touches some of the elements, but I don't think that they've modernized the sound, but Jekyll and Hyde, I think, was a much better project.
Yeah. No, so, I agree.
All right. So then we come to our next album on the list is oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at the wrong list here. Let me go back. I'm going to take a step back because we're out. We've started at Farewell. We've gone back to More Power to You. Behind More Power to You, because Jekyll and Hyde is above Farewell, and I apologize. I'm looking at the wrong album list. Behind More Power to You is Petra Praise.
Right.
Now, this is where it gets interesting, because Petra Praise was unique and quite a very different step, and we've been full of praise for that album. What they do with this release here, I think it's comparable in terms of the final outcome of the project.
I'm making this simple for myself, and I'm just asking the question, what would I rather pop in the player?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is I'd rather pop in Classic Petra.
Yeah. And I think I would agree with that. I think that's where this project falls. That's a very strong showing. Because I think yeah, there's when I look at some of these things, like we just talked about Farewell, I don't think as an overall project it's as strong as Jekyll and Hyde or More Power to You. They're very complete albums. I think this is a nearly complete album. There's just a couple of little misses on it that don't allow it to be as complete, but I think it's got a better final outcome than what Petra Pays was able to bring.
Yeah.
So there it is. Plastic Petra comes in at number 7 all time on our album rankings. Just going over those from the top, number 1 is Beyond Belief. Number 2 is This Means War. Number 3 is Jekyll and Hyde. 4 is Captured in Time and Space. 5 is Farewell. 6 is More Power to You. And 7 is Classic Petra. But you think about this. Of the top 7 albums, 3 of them were the last 3 albums that the band released that we've looked at so far. That, I think, just comes back again to what we were talking about last time, about how strong the band has continued to be since Bob came out of retirement and became full-time with the band again and focused on the ministry full-time again. The strength that came out of that is evident in what was released.
Yeah. No, yeah, I agree with that.
All right. So we move into our overall top 25 songs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there are several songs on this list that are already in the top 25. Okay. I think. Let me just go through our list. There's several on this album that are already in the list, and so we are going to ask, is this update worthy of a move up in the list?
Sure.
Okay. So let's focus on the songs that are in the list already, in the top 25. I'm going to start at the lower end and work our way up. Okay. Sitting at number 15, at the moment is Rose Colored Stained Glass Windows.
I don't think this version
to the original version.
I don't think this version replaces the original as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. Yep. All right. I think the next one's going to be pretty clear cut again. We've got Clean. This version of Clean to the Captured in Time and Space live version of Clean, which we've already noted are almost the same.
They are almost the same. I'm still going Captured in Time and Space.
All right. So before we move on to the last song that's in both. Oh, no. So we've got Grave Robber. We'll look at Grave Robber. We've got Grave Robber at number 3. I've already said I don't think the live version of this is as good as the live version on Captured in Time and Space.
No, and I wouldn't nudge it out either. So yeah.
So we're not going to have any changes there. So I'm just going to drop out of the top 25 and have a look at a couple of songs that are sitting just outside. More Power to You, is sitting at number 28. How do you feel this version compares to the original, and would you move it up?
Yeah, no, I don't think I would.
All right. Beamer Seat. Now, this is one song that I think we've both agreed this version is better than the original.
It is. Where have we got it on the list?
So, Beamer Seat comes in at 33 on the list.
33.
Is it strong enough? Okay, let me give you some of the songs that are sitting above it. Do you think this updated version is going to push it above? And obviously we're talking about the style and the musicality of the song, because the words are the same.
Yep.
And it's all encompassing for our listeners. This is an all encompassing thing. It's not just the music. It's not just the words. It's all encompassing. So above Beamer Seat is He Came, He Saw, He Conquered. So we basically just got to ask ourselves the question, does this version of Beamer Seat outdo He Came, He Saw, He Conquered?
You know what? Actually, I'd say, yeah.
Okay. All right. And above that, is what we've affectionately taken on as the Greg X Files trilogy, the praise medley off Captured in Time and Space, the incorporation of all three songs, because we just couldn't keep putting all three songs on the list in consecutive order.
Yeah, I wouldn't push it higher than that.
Okay, so it really only moves up one spot. Okay. All right, here we go. This is where we're going to have our conversation, because I think this is where the conversation really sits. Adonai. Before we go there, is Too Big to Fail good enough to break into the 25?
No.
No. I agree. I just wanted to put it out there. No, I agree.
And if you want to throw back to The Rock on the Greg list as well, or the non-Bob songs list.
I'm not sure it'd bust in there either.
I don't think it'd break in anywhere there either. So,
all right. So here we go. Adonai. This version of Adonai is, like I said, it is outstanding. And I'm ready to make the argument that I think this is possible to jump all the way to the top. Okay. At the top of our list is I Am on the Rock. Now, I Am on the Rock is a great song with a great guitar lead riff. And I think the lead riff and the riff of the song is a very strong element of why it moved into the number one slot in this playlist when we did the Beyond Belief album, when we looked at it strong lyrically. I would argue that the praise and worship element, that the lyrics of Adonai, the praise that's being put out there, and then the strength that comes through the updating of the guitar sound, I think it's strong enough to warrant an argument that it could be over I Am on the Rock. That the one thing that I think you're really comparing here is, does the lead on I Am on the Rock, that lead intro, does that keep I Am on the Rock above Adonai? That's where I think this argument starts. This conversation, I should say. It's not an argument. We're not arguing.
Well, we don't know that we are yet. Yeah, I don't think I would argue for it to dethrone the number one. I don't think I'm pushing it higher than I Am on the Rock. As you say, there's not one element that we're looking at. It's a whole thing. I Am on the Rock, in a sense, as a representation of Petra, I think it reaches more broadly to reflect a larger era of the band. It ties in to, you know, its origins. It projects forward to the future a bit, creates big atmosphere. It soars. It's a stadium song. I love Adonai. I really do. But I think that they would have needed to do some more work on a range. They would have needed to almost do like a double take, only a good version of double take, and really think about what do we need to add? What space do we need to create in this song to really push it above, as great as it is? I can't think about booting number one.
All right. So sitting at number two is the song that I think many people were surprised didn't sit at number one from the same album, Beyond Belief. And there's something about this live version of Adonai that I think they both have very distinct introductions. Beyond Belief has that, you know, that classical that adds to it, and the build that comes. This Adonai with that guitar, with this intro, the really strong guitar, I think it rivals the Beyond Belief intro. I really do. I think that you know, you've got a distinction here. It comes down to, I think, the lyrics, whether you are looking at the lyrics of life with God being beyond belief, or the adoration and glorification of God being what raises it up. That's where I think we're going to be looking at between these two songs.
And I'm more willing to have a look at this spot, because again, in terms of like the atmosphere that you're creating or you're engaging in, beyond belief doesn't, like, as a song, beyond belief doesn't do what I Am on the Rock does.
And I think the other argument I throw in, we talk about the way a live version sounds and what the feel of this live version of Adonai does. The one thing we miss, we never got a Dream Team in their prime live version of Beyond Belief.
We got
the Farewell. We noted that we don't think the Farewell version is as good as the studio version of Beyond Belief. A live version of the Dream Team might be you know, something that would have been great to really compare here. I'm wondering if the live element and the feel and the excitement that seems to be coming out maybe pips Beyond Belief.
I think so. I think yes.
And so there you have it. Adonai, the classic Petra live version, comes in, now moves up to the number two song overall. And I'm happy to concede. I think I would agree with the conversation that I'm on the Rock is still worthy of that number one spot. So what an amazing way to round out what we've seen from Petra, to bring an album of such quality, to have songs of such strength, and that you know, after nearly 40 years, they're still churning this out.
It's a testament to the band, testament to what it means to them, and I think that's something that deep down all fans actually, it's something that they want to know and they want to see. They want to know that the artists who are creating the stuff that means so much to them have a similar connection to it. Like there's nothing more dispiriting than musicians who, like, I hate the songs that I have to play because the audience expects it. But you never get that vibe at all from any of Petra stuff. And, you know, that's really wonderful.
Well, there we go. Classic Petra in the books. If you haven't listened to these albums, guys, check them out. They're on Spotify. If you can get the studio version is not on Spotify. You can buy that through Greg X Volz's site, through Petra's site, and you can buy a digital copy through iTunes, things like that. The live versions are on Spotify. Check out the DVD recording. We really encourage you to do it. And we'd love to hear from you. What did you guys think of this album? You know, what were your thoughts hearing Classic Petra? We'd love to hear your feedback and what you think of this album. Lindsay, how can they reach us?
Well, you come to our Facebook page, On Rock, a Petrospective, or you can reach out to us directly by email at wemeanrock@gmail.com. And I'm not brilliant at responding to people quickly, but I do get to you eventually. But I certainly do. We certainly do read, and we appreciate everybody who reaches out to us. So.
And we have appreciated everyone coming on the journey. As I said, I am going to be posting these lists in on the Facebook page very soon. So keep your eye out. I've built playlists for these, which I will post links to when we're finished. I'll post links to the Spotify playlist so you can just access them and listen to them yourself. But we're not done.
No.
Classic Petra. You would think, well, they're done. They're finished. We're not done. We've still got more to come, because next time you hear from us, well, Classic Petra is still going. There's more to come from Greg and Classic Petra. And and we're going to be hearing, because you don't just do, when it comes to sequels, you don't just do one. You've got to do multiples. And we're in for a two. We're in for a two. We have Petra Praise 2. We're in for Back to the Rock 2.
That's right. And as with all things, we'll be asking that perennial question. Does the sequel live up to the original? Does it surpass the original? We'll consider all of this and more next time that we see you guys. As always, we thank you for coming along with us and listening in. And for On Rock and Petrospective, I'm Lindsay Hall.
And I'm Dave Paul.
We'll see you next time.